96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
So at any point when the rhetoric ramps up to the point where calculated, cold-blooded assassination of police officers happened, this rhetoric has gotten out of control. We've heard Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. Well, cops' lives matter, too.
That's Harris County, Texas Sheriff Ron Hickman after Sheriff's Deputy Darren Goforth was shot to death last week. 30-year-old Shannon Miles is accused of gunning down the uniformed deputy. Now, the sheriff believes Goforth was targeted because of his uniform, and he linked the shooting to rising anti-police sentiments. However, investigators have not pinned down a motive. Well, tonight, we're talking about the Black Lives Matter movement and the message, and we're asking if something has changed. Has something been lost? Well, my guests are Omolara Williams-McAllister. She is the co-founder of Black Lives Matter DC, and civil rights attorney Donald Temple. Lines are open. If you have a question or a comment about the Black Lives Matter movement and all of the things that have been occurring as of late surrounding the movement and the message at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876. 855-288-4876. I want to thank you, Omolara, for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
Also, and Attorney Donald Temple, thanks for joining us on the phone. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Before we get to that issue in Texas, I want to ask you first, Donald, about this issue in La Plata, this so-called bad joke, for lack of a better term, this young man who was arrested for sending out a tweet and with the hashtag Black Lives Matter, saying that about talking about killing white people in La Plata. From a legal perspective, just purely a legal perspective, what responsibility does the movement have, if any, for this?
Well, it's a very broad question. I try to understand it. I mean, I don't know that the movement per se structurally can assume responsibility for how people think and interpret their struggle and their aspirations around the country. I'm certain at least the movement cannot and should not encourage threats against anyone, because it would have criminal implications. So the movement, and I don't think it does, I think the movement is much more on the offensive, and to the extent that it's on the defensive, it's attempting to encourage public accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that point of view, I don't think that the movement can assume responsibility for what people think, no more than the same thing could be applied to people in other cultures. White folk cannot be, certain people can't assume responsibility for how 150, 200 million people think. That's
mm-hmm.
a ludicrous proposition.
Mm-hmm.
So they should have a very narrow, I think they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do. And I certainly commend, deeply commend the young activists, not because they're starting a movement, but because they're resuscitating and propelling a movement that didn't start in 2012 or 2013. That movement is historical. Black Lives Matter movement started with Dred Scott. It started before Dred Scott.
Okay.
It continued. And so that's kind of the sensitivity of the subject.
Omolara, tell me about Black Lives Matter for those who are still trying to get their hands around it. What is the mission? What is the purpose?
So Black Lives Matter, as was alluded to, was started by three women who were really responding to the death of Trayvon Martin. And the lack of accountability for the person who killed him. And in that time, there have been other deaths at the hands of the state that Black Lives Matter has responded to, and that's been a lot of momentum for the movement. But really, the movement is more expansive than that, in the sense that we're looking for full humanity of Black people to be recognized legally, and not just in the word, but also in the execution of the words of the law.
What do you mean by that?
So we're looking at quality of life across the board. We're looking at equity as opposed to equality, and we're looking at indicators for that in the lives of everyday people. So, you know, in the same way that your other guests alluded to, this movement has started before, you know, where people were saying, okay, well, we have separate but equal schools. Let's test the quality of those schools. We're looking at the same things, but we're looking at them in housing. We're looking at them in employment. We're looking at them in the ability of a Black trans woman to be able to receive medical services at any hospital anywhere. And so it's really an expansive movement for Black people's lives to have the same quality of life of other people living in the United States, and more specifically of the dominant culture, which would be white people.
But interestingly enough, this certainly foundationally, it really begins with, unfortunately, the deaths of so many Black people, and not just men, obviously. Mm-hmm. When you talk about, you know, Sandra Bland, for example, those who have died while in the custody of state agencies, police and deputies, and correctional facilities. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it is two things. It starts with, you know, one, the police and people dying in correctional facilities and dying at the hands of police are a very tangible, visible, accessible thing that draws to a point all of the other issues that Black communities and Black people are facing every day in terms of inequities. And so the directness of, you know, dying in the hands of someone who's charged to serve and protect you is something that really appeals to people. But Black Lives Matter goes even farther beyond that. So we're not just looking at why you died in the hands of police, but how you got to that place as well, and the trends of how, in general, you know, there are more Black people incarcerated in the country, things like that. The larger picture of what are these little things indicative of, and how do we shift the needle on those larger cultures of discrimination in different systems in our nation.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. We're talking about the Black Lives Matter movement, the message. Let's go to Angelo, calling from La Plata. Hey, Angelo, haven't spoken to you in a while. How are you?
I'm great, Harold. I just want to say I think that was a wonderful satire of symbolic transition that Millette Green did. That was so nicely said. And also a good way to go into the fall. I just only wish we could actually live that. But I just want to quickly say something about the whole Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Listen, your guest already said it. It was way before Dred Scott. The problem that I have, Harold, is that we have not taken responsibility for our own lives. And the problem is we march and we protest and we walk and we holler and scream, but I don't see the same type of uproar in these cities where our Black boys are still dying by large numbers. Everybody wants to come out when a kid is killed by a police officer, and rightfully so. But where is the movement towards the accountability? If we really say Black Lives Matter like they do, why don't we start taking accountability for all this crime in our neighborhoods?
Angelo, thank you so much. Omolara, is that a separate issue? Also, Donald, I want you to comment on that also. Is that a separate issue, or are these two kind of intertwined? Because we heard Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, mention that a couple of years ago during the presidential campaign, and there was a lot of infighting about that on a political scale. Is it the same?
I think that there's a displacement of responsibility when people point to the level of violence or crime that happens in Black communities, and when they associate it specifically with Blackness, with the Black part of the community. I think they're again, when you're not looking at the inequities. So if you look at different social studies that have been done and psychological studies about how you treat people and the conditions that you put them in and what that will allow people to do or what will naturally flourish in those conditions, then you'll see, you know, that when people don't have quality housing, when they don't have access to food, when stress levels are high, when there's no trauma care, for example, after killings in Black communities. In Sandy Hook, we sent counselors, grief counselors, to deal with that school shooting and the people who were impacted by it. But when you have Black people shot by police in communities around the country, we don't see people sending in trauma counselors. We know that hurt people hurt people. We know that that trauma is going to show up in some way. And so to say that Black people aren't taking care of our own communities is really another way to point back at Black people without looking at the larger systems that play into what is happening.
Donald, real quick, your thoughts about that?
You know, I think there's a dichotomy at hand. On one hand, you're talking about state-based accountability. You're talking about public issues, public accountabilities. When the state incarcerates millions of people and deprives them of certain fundamental constitutional rights, or when the state police illegally arrest and detain and there's a sentencing system that results in a disproportionate incarceration of people, that's the state. The other side of that coin is the dichotomy, is the private side. And it's a myth to some extent. Black people, and it's not said enough, are actively engaged in the preservation and the protection of the community. Just as an example, two off the top, Concerned Black Men, Coalition of 100 Black Men. There are others, Kappa Alpha Psi, Omega Psi Phi. There are men that are engaged every day in developing young Black men throughout the country. That story doesn't get told. Whether we have to do enough, yes, but that's a diversion. Okay. The real issue on the Black Lives Matter is a comprehensive question. Indeed, is in this particular context, is pervasive police misconduct.
Yeah. I need to talk about that on the other side of this break. We're going to go back to the phones, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the Black Lives Matter movement and the message. Has something changed? Has something been lost? Has something been confused? Are some people concerned about the direction in which the movement is going? Is there a question about all lives matter? We are talking with Omolara Williams-McAllister. She's co-founder of Black Lives Matter here in D.C. and civil rights attorney Donald Temple. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Kathy calling from Bowie. Kathy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I believe that it's intricately entwined when we talk about Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter. It's an opportunity to kind of bridge the two. At this stage, you cannot separate whether we're dealing with police shootings or the shootings and tragedies that happen on the street every day. It's interesting that the vocal point only comes out when it's talking about police officers and, you know, officer-related killings, jail-related killings. But to have those people, same people that are talking Black Lives Matter, to come out when, or, you know, lack of better terms, Pookie gets killed on the street corner. His life has to matter as well. So I believe that some people, when we talk about the mission, what mission statement is actually out there for Black Lives Matter? Do we have separate groups across the board, and that way the message is not really clear? You have these
Let me address some of that for you, Kathy. So Black Lives Matter is a decentralized movement, so there is a national kind of convening that keeps us all together, that holds us all connected to each other. There's a website there, and there's a list of things that we envision for the world on the national website, so you can look that up online. Each chapter also has its own focus areas that they define based on what their local needs are and what their local strengths and capabilities are, what the energy is moving towards in that place. So here in D.C., for example, we focus really heavily on things around Pookie, who you mentioned, who might be out on the corner. So we do a lot of work actually in building community within community. So we have emotional emancipation circles where people can come and deal with the regular race-based trauma that they deal with every day. Mm-hmm. And we have other forms where we speak with community members and we work to rebuild community before we even start to go out to try to hold other people accountable.
Okay, well, Kathy, thank you so much. And I want to ask you about that website issue because, like you said, this is a decentralized movement. And if you go to Black Lives Matter, how does someone reach a Omolara or, you know, some of the other leaders? I want to talk about that some more because this is really kind of different from the previous generations of civil rights movements, leadership. So hold on to that because I need you to address that. If you are on the phone, that includes Leroy in Grand Rapids or Mike calling from Southeast D.C., the Daily Drum will continue. 202-319-7810-855-288-4876. The original Quiet Storm with Jeff Brown is next on 96.3 WHUR. Stay with us. This conversation continues in about 15 seconds.